Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experiment.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Reality. Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. My name is Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and I'm so excited about today's show and today's guest. But before I get to the guest, I need to just do a little brief intro to my new listeners. You know, I have new listeners every week. It just seems like so many people are finding Reality Spirituality. And I just want to explain what this show is about. Who am I, and what is Reality Spirituality? Well, this show, it's reality spirituality. It's not a religion. It's a guideline to living connected to our energy source. Now, some people use the term God, source energy. I use the term universe, and it's still energy. It's the same force, and it's just about living connected, and that means I like to focus on everyday, moment-by-moment situations and circumstances and actually dissecting everything to find out why or how we can become more connected or how we become disconnected. And, you know, when you're disconnected to the energy source or to the universe, you feel certain emotions like dissatisfaction, anger. I'm trying to think of all these emotions that you can really feel the difference between that and being happy, feeling content, feeling at peace. And this show is about how to experience more happiness, more peace, more inner peace, regardless of your circumstances, regardless of what's going on, regardless of what it looks like, how it feels like. This show is about how to live consciously, how to raise your own personal vibration. And that's what the show is about. That's who I'm about. I am a self-proclaimed, I love this, self-proclaimed happiness specialist. And what that means is for decades, I was searching, looking for a feeling, how to feel good, how to feel good regardless, how to remain at peace in a rocky boat. You know, life is ups and downs, and who knows what happens, but it's really that about that foundation and how to stay connected. Reality spirituality for me is constantly growing, changing, evolving, and learning. This life, for me, the purpose is to grow and to have a good time and to have a good experience while growing, to experience but feel good about all of it, not labeling, not thinking that something is wrong. Oh, gosh, now I just lost my job and now something is, in other words, everything, in my opinion, my humble opinion, is happening for my betterment. The universe does not make mistakes. So I don't control what happens, but I definitely have control over my perception of what's happening, my perspective about what's happening, my behavior, my words, my attitude, and my personal vibration. So that's what reality spirituality is about in a nutshell. And today, I'm excited and grateful and proud to have a woman that, you know, I don't know how the universe connects me to all these fabulous guests, but the universe did a great job with Holland Hayes. And she is an author of Consciously Connecting, A Simple Process to Reconnect in a Disconnected World. Wasn't I just talking about that? I'm going to let her do more of a brief introduction and bring her on the show live right now. Holland, welcome to Reality Spirituality. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Rebecca. Good morning, everyone. This is really exciting, especially as I've been listening to what you've been saying, and it so connects into what I do and what Consciously Connecting is about.
Now, let's talk about Consciously Connecting and what it's about and what you do. But before we get to this, your work, give me a little bit of background. Because how did you evolve into this person you are today?
Well, I wasn't always a connector, let's put it that way. Although I guess when I look back, you know, there has been a circuitous route. You know, I've been a teacher, I've been in retail, so I've been in human resources. So in a way, those are always points where you are a connector with another person, aiding them in reaching their goals and what it is they need and they want. But for me, this journey came about because I had been doing, after the collapse of Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, I had been working with a lot of small businesses, but I had a lot of individuals reach out to me after that time. It was a really rocky time in New York City, and I started really coaching people one-on-one, and so many people, either who had a lot of money or didn't have a lot of money, it didn't really matter because they were so disconnected from what it is that they really wanted, from their humanity, from their spirituality, and they weren't really sure how to connect the dots and how to put the pieces together. So that really started for me the next part of my journey, if you will. And then I was doing some workshops. I was leading workshops and doing speaking engagements, and I kept hearing the same dialogue over and over, which was, I get what you're saying, but I'm not exactly sure how to go about it and what the steps would be other than the few seeds you've planted today. And so I really had the idea at that point to write the book, Consciously Connecting. And I myself at that time was feeling some tremendous disconnect, because it is so easy to get to that point because we are all, you know, we're round the clock on these devices. We sleep with our phones. We sleep with our iPads. We don't shut things down. We go on vacation, and the first thing you realize when someone gets into a hotel lobby is everybody's running to, you know, get to the computers and get on the internet to check their emails. And here you might be in some exotic foreign land, you know, hiking waterfalls or, you know, doing something really fabulous. And the first thing you're thinking of is reconnecting, but not staying connected to the person you've been with or the place you are visiting. It's all about getting back to technology. So I really thought, boy, we are at, as humanity, we are at the precipice of a terrible disconnect from ourselves and each other, and we really need to find our way back. So Consciously Connecting is the how-to for living a more connected life.
Okay. Wow.
So, it was a lot to digest, I mean, wasn't it?
No, it was. And I'm just jotting down a few important points. First of all, let's just go back a little bit. You talked about New York. What year was this?
Well, this is 2008 and 2009,
okay,
when we were experiencing those really rocky points. And so for me, what was happening, because I work as a consultant with a lot of small businesses, the small businesses had the fallout as well. And they really suffered because, you know, the financial industry in this city, and for many of us, whether you're in New York City or not, the financial industry, when there is massive fallout there, it really does trickle down through the economy in so many other ways. And so the fallout was just, it was felt everywhere.
Okay. And so my question is, I have a lot of questions, but my question is, do you believe, in your opinion, in your experiences, is there a difference between external stimulus and internal stimulus? Because on the show I talk a lot about what's going on externally, and it sounds like what you're talking about now in 2008 and businesses is external. Is there a difference between external and internal states?
Well, sure. And here's what we have to remember, and this is why it is so important, and it's why I knew from the beginning that I wanted to call the book Consciously Connecting, because we are not machines. So when something happens externally, I may not work at Bear Stearns, so I'm not affected in the fact externally that I no longer have a job or that my paycheck doesn't come from there per se. But remember, that person and the people that it trickles down to, it affects the economy. So now it affects externally what if you own a medical practice, all of those people that are laid off from a large part of the economy no longer have medical insurance. They're looking for other ways, and they no longer are shopping maybe at affluent stores like Saks Fifth Avenue, and they no longer they don't go to the movies as much. So everything starts to shift, which means it starts to shift for me because maybe a movie ticket goes from $10 to $13 because the guy at the theater's got to recoup that money. And then what happens is, whether we are the person who is laid off or it is me who isn't and who feels it, we start to feel differently inside, because any time there's any sort of shift for us financially or spiritually, we feel that on an intricate level inside, and it starts to affect our self-esteem, and it starts to affect how quickly we get frustrated, and it starts to affect how we feel connected to other people and whether we want to connect to other people. We may start to feel a little grumpier. We may start to feel off kilter and off that pivot point that we really feel great at. We may not go to the gym as much. We may not eat as healthily as we once did. And all of that is happening on an external basis. We know that when we reach for foods that are not the best for us over and over and over again, that yes, it changes us externally, but it also changes us internally. So does that kind of make sense?
It does make sense. It makes a lot of sense. So the question again, not again, but let me get a little bit more specific. So do you think there is a difference between external and internal stimulus and or feeling? In other words, if the external is affected, then the internal is going to be affected.
The internal will be affected, but now let's talk about to the degree.
Okay.
So when we have things that happen in our lives that are really huge, they really shift our consciousness in a different direction, which is losing a job, losing a parent, getting divorced, some illness. Those are really big things, life events, that we absorb those really deeply internally, and we really have to make sure at those times that we are taking care of ourselves by giving ourselves time for solitude, time to rethink our priorities, our destination, what it is that we really want and how it is that we're going about it, and is it healthy for ourselves and our family. Those are big shape-shifters, if you will. Mm-hmm. On a smaller basis, if we have a shift in our income, which isn't huge, but a small shift, that isn't as, what should I say, that doesn't require as much internalization, right, because mm-hmm. we merely have to stop and say, okay, have I really prioritized my money? Have I really been as responsible and connected to what I should be doing, saving versus spending, allocating for the future? And sometimes those are easy decisions that can be made fairly simply with either picking up the phone and maybe calling a friend, a spouse, and say, hey, you know, we didn't get the bonus or we didn't get the raise and we were counting on that family vacation. And so that's something that's much smaller. You feel it internally. But I really do believe that when we have spent time with ourselves, when we have spent time with the how-tos that I offer in Consciously Connecting, you are strengthening yourself spiritually. You are strengthening these inner muscles of peace and of really knowing, hey, I got to get up, I got to walk away, and I need to go to solitude at some point today. You know, you may be in the middle of a business meeting where you have the epiphany of like things aren't right, things aren't going well. I need to have some quiet. I need to have some solitude. I need to go back to the well, and I need to sit there for a bit, and I need to reflect because something doesn't feel right. We know on an internal basis when someone is poisonous. We know something isn't right, and I talk about how to disconnect from poisonous people because none of us need to have those people in our lives, but they do come across our paths. We have to know, we have to have the internal strong enough so that the external can say, you know, I can no longer be with you. This is not good for me. We don't have to be mean to people. We don't have to be critical. But we have to be strong enough inside to know that when there is someone who is poisonous on our path, we need to let them go or we need to not pick them up in the first place. So there is, when you are strong and when you have worked those muscles to get to a place internally where you are aligned spiritually, and I don't want your listeners to misunderstand. For some people, that is being very strong in their path of religion. For others, it is not so much religion, and I just bucket it all under spiritual because there is no, as we all know, there is no right or wrong path, whether you go to synagogue, whether you go to church, whether you go to town, none of that, that is all on the periphery. It is what you do with the information and how you internalize that information, whatever channel it comes to you from. If today, if listening to your show is your listener's weekly spirituality, then it is about how do you process this information, how do you internalize it, and then how do you go about your path until you meet with Rebecca next week. So how we deal with these things, and again, the stronger we are internally, the more we give to ourselves. So technology is a big one. We all
well,
know.
Let me stop you really quick because I
sure,
just want to.
Sure.
There's a lot of points. You said something earlier about you're on vacation and you're connecting with your iPads and you're connecting with your phone and you know you're right in the middle of a waterfall. I totally get what you're saying. You were talking about doing as opposed to just being. And when you talked about this silence or going into solitude, it's about just being okay with being quiet. I like to, and you talked about refueling. I like to say that, listen, there are days when, for me, and I'm only going to speak about me because I don't know about anyone else, but there are days when I feel that, listen, there could be a tornado right in front of my house and I'm really calm and cool. And there are also days when the trash doesn't get taken out, then I'm, the trash! So, but I know that it's a sign. It's a sign that I need to. You said have some silence. I like to say I need to hibernate. I need to refuel. I need to hibernate. And what you're talking about is really just being aware of who you are, and we're all different because I can look at somebody and I'm hiking and there's a waterfall and they're on their iPad and I know that they need that for whatever reason. They need to experience that because that's their own journey. And it's really about, for me, accepting what other people are doing without me judging that what they're doing is either right or wrong, because I definitely know that they are learning their own way. We're all we're different as our fingerprints, and so my journey is so unique, and whatever anyone else's journey is also unique. But another thing that you said, which is really, really important, is the practicing, exercising those muscles. And it is about the practice. It is about being conscious and the practice. So I just wanted to kind of shoot my little two cents in there because you said so many really important points.
Well, the thing that I want to stress, I think today, and I try to do this when I teach and when I do motivational speaking and when I lead workshops and work one-on-one coaching people, is that I try to express that we are human beings and we are not human doings.
Mm.
But so often we are trying to approach life as a human doing. So let's go back to your trash not being picked up. You know, you're fine with a tornado. If the trash doesn't get picked up, you may be the tornado. I always ask people when they give an example, and I say, okay, in the realm of things, though, you know, 1 to 10, and you know, 10 is death, disease, you know, a tornado, losing everything, and the trash not getting picked up, like, where is it 1 to 10? And usually, you know, if there's an example like this, someone will usually then giggle and go, okay, that's like a, you know, like really
zero.
In the realm of life.
Zero. It's a zero.
Zero. But they're like, how do you, but at the time, for you, it felt like a 10. So how do you take it? I'm often asked something, you know, similar but not exactly. How do I take it from feeling like a 10 down to what it should be in perspective? And that is something that I teach, and that is something that is in Consciously Connecting. There are the how-tos so that you are putting your life with Consciously Connecting into perspective. And you are absolutely spot on, Rebecca, when you say we are all different and we all have different journeys, and that is the beauty, is that we are learning from one another, because your journey is not my journey, and I will learn a tremendous amount from you today, and I hope the same. And that's what makes the world so exciting. It's part of the reason I love to travel and meet new people. But what I keep hearing over and over and over is that people want to practice connecting. They don't know how. People want to get back to, you know, we are seeing a rise in traveling to our national parks. We're seeing a rise in people having game nights. Did you think, I don't know, 10 years ago that game shows and, you know, the Tonight Show would start playing silly, kooky, fun little games on TV? Did we think we were going to ever get back to that? Because my parents come from the Midwest, so I grew up playing games. I will tell you, when I moved to New York City, people thought I was insane that I would invite friends over, I would cook dinner in, and I would say, let's play a game. People looked at me as if I had six heads. I mean, they looked at me like I was a woman in a Picasso painting, you know, with like three eyes and a crazy little head and a nose off center. They were like, what are you talking about? We don't play games. And who cooks dinner in? Now I will tell you, when my husband and I, because we love to entertain, now when we say to people, hey, do you guys want to go out on Saturday night? Or, you know, you can come over, relax. We'll throw something together because we love to cook. Every single time, it's we want to come over. We want to be in. We want to hunker in. We want to feel the warmth and the camaraderie that happens in a home from making a meal as opposed to going out. So there has been the shift. We are shifting more towards these moments of being human beings and not human doings running everywhere, doing all the stuff. And we don't want people on their phones when they're here. You're here to connect with us. So you got to shut the phones off or don't bring them. So that's just my rule. So that's just part of being in my home. And I'll tell you, we had a big Christmas party book launch, and I don't know, I think there were, by the end of the night, 75 people had been in and out, and there was no one on devices, no one doing any of that, and it was really just such a great evening. And so people want that camaraderie, and technology is fantastic, and I love it myself. I love technology. But what has happened is we have lost the ability to understand there is a time and a place for everything. And we seem to, that boundary, or one of the weeks I have in Consciously Connecting talks about drawing your line in the sand and really reconnecting to your boundaries. You know, if someone is making you constantly move your boundaries and you're doing it and you're unhappy, this is the week to reclaim what your boundaries are on an issue. And so we need to just reclaim our boundaries to say, hey, when I go to dinner with people, short of someone being in the hospital, short of a family emergency, I am not the president of the United States, and I know that this other person is just as busy as me, and they have carved out time in their schedule, sacred time. I mean, let's face it, that is the one commodity that none of us can get more of. We have a finite number there. We have a specific amount of free time every single day, and it is very difficult to say at the end of the day, oh my gosh, I should have called Rebecca. I'm feeling terrible. It's the stroke of midnight. I'm just gonna blink my eyes and add another 2 hours to the day. We can't do that. So if we've missed our opportunity to connect to our humanity, which is others, the other people in our lives, when it becomes vital to pick up that phone and say, I love you so much. Thank you for supporting me on my journey. Thank you for encouraging me to go back to school, to get that new job. Isn't it more wonderful to hear a voice and emotion with that gratitude, with that thanks for, hey, you know what? Just thank you, Rebecca, that you've been an amazing friend to me for the last 5 years. I just wanted to call. You're on my mind for the last 4 days. I didn't want to send an email. I wanted you to hear it from me. I got to run, but thank you. What does that do to our spirits? What does that do when something like that happens? I mean, you sit taller. A smile goes on your face. Your whole body just lights up. I have people in workshops very often where I will say, turn to the person next to you. Take 10 seconds to just take them in if you haven't already. And find something that is beautiful about that other person. It can be the color of their eyes, their glasses, their shoes, the laces of their shoes, whatever it is, and give them a compliment. Then we talk about what happens. People say, I sat taller. I felt so good. Like my heart just like felt warmed and good. And it just felt amazing because we don't do this enough. We are running around doing, and we're forgetting to just be, in the beauty of life, the presence of another. And I'm not saying we don't ever want to, you know, hike a waterfall and get out our iPad, because sometimes I get out my iPhone to take a picture. But the trap, you know, the trap there, Rebecca, is that, and I've watched people over and over, sometimes when my husband and I have gone to some of these wonderful places, is that you hear this other person going, oh, come on, you don't need to post that to Facebook now. Come on, let's enjoy this. And the other person's like, well, hold on, it's just another minute. And then what happens is, and this is always fun to watch on the periphery, is then the other person kind of gets frustrated, and then they take out their device, and they start to connect. And sometimes I'll say to my husband, I just want to watch this. I'm just fascinated from a psychological, you know, viewpoint. I don't want to judge it. I just want to watch it. And then the next thing you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and they're both on the devices, disconnected from what it was they really were doing or came to do. And that's the pitfall. The pitfall of being tethered so much to our devices and not giving ourselves, look, we need downtime from anything that's out there. And I don't want to just have technology be the punching bag. We need downtime from work. It is the very reason that work was originally, you know, scheduled, that it was a Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
I'm gonna interrupt you here because there's just too many things that you said that I would love to comment on, because I'm feeling you. I really do feel you, and I have a just a little bit of a different take, and I love that my audience gets because they're always listening to me and my two cents. So I love that they're getting such an expanded perspective, you being on the show. There's a few things here, and I totally agree with you. One of the is that looking at other people and feeling good and giving them a compliment and saying, wow, you know, I appreciate you, I love you, and all of that, and they get a great feeling. You're absolutely right. But this is I'm going to go a little bit deeper than that, because what if there aren't people to say that to you? What if you have to get that sense of feeling good about yourself and that feeling good about life from that person in the mirror? In other words, one of the things that I had to learn myself, which I'm still learning, is how to fill myself up. How to feel, and I totally get people that are very social and needing the social aspect. But there's another level where you for me, I have to be able to fill myself up without counting on others, without counting on my mother to say you're smart or you're intelligent or you're doing a good job, without having anyone. It's really a self-containment, and it's really about that relationship that I have with the universe.
Yes.
The universe is my number one relationship. And for me, I can be social, but sometimes the social is because it's so much stimulation, and I can do it in spurts. See, that's what I'm saying. We're all so different, because I can feel you, and you're such a wonderful social butterfly and getting – just bringing people together, which is just fabulous. But I also want to say that there's an other side where you really don't. This is for the people that I don't really have to be social to have that feeling of contentment, to have that feeling of being, to really not having to connect with. Because what if I'm in a jail cell? You know, I have to say, my son had to spend a night. Don't tell anybody. Hope no one's listening.
No, they've all tuned out for a minute. They're getting their devices. They're checking email.
Exactly. Put your earplugs in right now. And so it was just something really very minor. But he had to find a feeling of contentment and being okay, even in solitude, even not around, not being social. So there's more than just one way.
Yes.
And the other thing, you said something so good. It was earlier, you talked about poisonous people that incompatible energy. You're just not compatible with me. But even then, listen, I'm not going to invite people with incompatible energy to my home and have them eat for dinner, but I can be in their presence and be okay. Because when you go into a room and it's pitch black, it's dark, and you turn the light on, the darkness disappears. And so it's all about this, like you said earlier, practicing and exercising, being this light, being this bright light, where poisonous, darkness, negative, whatever you want to call them, has no effect on you or your energy or your personal vibration. But you don't hang out with them 24/7, but if you can, but you can still be in their presence without an effect on you.
Right. Yes, you are correct.
Now,
I want to back up for a second, because I think I probably haven't done the best job in leading you and the listeners to thinking this is more of a book that's about connecting to others. That's a small piece of it. This Consciously Connecting is really a book that is about interconnectedness to yourself and having the self-awareness that you want and need to feel whatever it is, whatever those missing pieces are in your life. And so what I've done, just to kind of give a little bit of the format of the book, is I've divided the book into the 12 months of the year. And each month has its own theme. And then within the theme of the month, there are four exercises. But the exercises are not about doing. The exercises are more about connection and being. So to go back to your point about solitude and how do you accept or give compliments if there's no one there to do that. So I start the book, and I want to just tell the listeners, because I've had some people write me who have seen the book from friends, and they've said, hey, you know, we're going into, at that time it was April, and they said, we're going into April, and, you know, can I go ahead and can start this now, because, you know, you started the book in January. Well, I did that just for the sake of continuity. That's how I started the book. But I will tell your listeners what I tell everyone. You can start Consciously Connecting at any time of the year, and you don't, if you open up and you peruse the table of contents and you look at January, which is Commencement on Reflection, is the name of that chapter. And we start, the first week is about, and you read about 2 pages a week, so it's not a huge commitment. But Commencement on Reflection starts with slowing down. So you look at, in your life, where are you always rushing? Where do you feel the need that you may want more time, or you feel you never really do something to completion? Or, and again, whatever it is that you feel, you pinpoint that, and then you spend the week, every time you're kind of going into overdrive or doing 6 things at once, you stop yourself and you kind of say, okay, I'm walking down the street with my dog on a leash, I'm on the cell phone, I'm looking at the newspaper, you know, I've got, hey, I need to, yeah, this may be a little dangerous. Let me pull back. I had a lot of dog owners that first week that obviously must live in larger cities, because they said, I didn't really realize until I read that first week in your book, and I realized, boy, not only is this dangerous, I'm not really enjoying what's going on around me. I'm not taking anything in. So I am no longer on the phone or reading the newspaper while I'm walking the dog. I'm walking the dog. I'm chatting with the dog. I'm stopping to pet my dog. And then I'm going home and checking my emails and reading my newspaper. And I thought, wow, isn't that great? So the second week in January is reflecting on your blessings. So it's about gratitude. And again, it's really simple. It is about 5 things when you wake up in the morning. You can do it when you're making your coffee, when you're in the shower, when you're getting dressed, and 5 things at the end of the day that you're grateful for. Because we all kind of know that once we get into that shift of really being grateful and thankful, and I say in the book, look, if this is hard for you at first, if you're feeling like, I don't like my job, I don't like where I live, I don't like my, you know, I don't own a house, I'm in a crappy apartment, that's all okay, but where you start is, I'm grateful, at least I have an apartment. I'm grateful I have a bed. I'm grateful I have a cup for my coffee. So it doesn't, you know, these don't have to be like, I'm grateful for a Rolls Royce. This doesn't have to be big stuff. I'm grateful I have two eyes I can see. I'm grateful I have glasses to correct my vision, whatever it is. And so what I have experienced by working with my clients is that when we start to take time to reflect on you know, gratitude, slow down. February is all about loving yourself more. And it's not about getting the appreciation from other people. It's about giving it to yourself. And that's where we have to start, because what I know is that if I don't love myself, it makes it harder for others to love me, because it is harder for me to accept that. And so I know that I have to love myself, and I know that I have to be kind to myself. And by starting with that, so I've had some people that have said, I have really bad self-esteem. I just picked up your book just a week ago. Where do I start? And I say, take a look, peruse February. If it resounds for you, start in February. Once you realize that this journey of life is your own and you can craft it any way you want, you don't have to follow just because it says May and it's May. You like February, do February. You want to do December now, get wild and crazy, do December. It's all about connecting to what you need and what you want.
Well, again, you talk for a couple of minutes, and then all of these jewels just spill out. And you said a couple of things earlier about rushing around. I have eliminated rushing from my life. I don't rush to anything.
Oh, good for you.
Even if I'm late, quote late. Because I've gotten rid of this thing about time. For me, time is an illusion anyway. Yet time is a man-made concept. There is no time in nature. There is no time in the universe. So this thing about scheduling a time. Listen, if I have to get on a plane, okay, I gotta get there at a certain time.
Yeah.
But everything else, or an appointment. But everything else. No, I've eliminated rushing. Holland, honestly, I take public transportation into my office, and it's an express bus. And I can say, and I used to, I see the bus, I started speeding up my walking, and even getting to a jog and a run. And I'm telling you right now, if I see a bus and it's half a block away, 30 feet away, 40 feet away, I do not speed up. I have missed so many buses just because I refuse to rush. Because for me, rushing doesn't feel good anymore. It just doesn't feel good. And you said something about practicing. I love just practicing. I don't know, because I can't feel happy and rush at the same time. So I got to choose either one. And if I'm prioritizing happiness, I've just eliminated rushing, period.
That is so beautiful, and I really hope that resounds with your listeners, because that is so well put. And I know for years my husband and I were at odds, because I lovingly call my husband Turtle, because he is so slow. And trust me, I'm even faster than the hare. He's like, oh my God. So for me, you know, the universe does have a sense of humor, as we all know, because
Are you kidding? They're the worst.
You know, because I could not have had chosen a husband who is slower. I'm like, Wayne, you gotta pick up the pace. There are just days I'm like, you're killing me. But I really realize, yes, I realize that I am so speedy. And I just want to read you this one little thing that's in the week of slowing down from Consciously Connecting. And I say, acknowledge that when you try to fit too many things into a day, you are missing out on something, your life. You do not have to run all the time. give yourself permission to take a stroll. And this is what Wayne, and also my mother, who is late to everything. She will be late to her funeral. We would be late to church as children because she wanted to drive. She wanted to have an adventure and not just get to church. Her idea was let's turn down a different street. My brother and I would say, Mom, we're late. She's like, God knows our intentions are good. We'll get there. It's fine. We're going to have an adventure getting there. And we would just roll our eyes, and we thought she was nuts. Well, I didn't learn my lesson with her, so the universe said, we are going to give you a husband that is slower.
So, oh, my goodness.
So I've had to learn to slow down. And you're right, running for the bus. I've seen more people living in New York City run for that bus, trip, fall, and not get up. And so there's not a lot of joy in falling and breaking something running for a bus that will be there in another 5 minutes. So you are spot on with that one, Rebecca.
Oh, well, thank you. So I want to ask you, my dear Holland, what are your challenges now? You said something about your husband and your, I mean, that's just so, isn't that something? I've had one of my biggest, it's so much to do, is accepting other people exactly the way they are and not trying to change them. I mean, this acceptance, you said something about self-love, this acceptance, and you're right, being your own best friend, not criticizing, not looking and finding something wrong, but accepting. And so what are your challenges today? Like, when I say challenges today, I mean like the husband being slow and, you know, fill us in on some of the backstage that you are learning.
Well, I have had a very, very long journey with self-acceptance. I was told from my father that I was ugly. And I had a very difficult stage in my life where I had acne. Now, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, we've all had zits, but I had cystic acne. So my acne was so bad that I always say it kind of looked like that, you know, that monkey butt, you know, that those big red, it was horrible. It was these big red welts that were shiny that you really couldn't cover them up because that sheen of the skin didn't take to makeup, and I had them all over my face, my neck, my shoulders, my back, my chest, my arms. And I wore turtlenecks year round, and wouldn't you know, I had just kids used to talk about my flawless skin up until about 10th grade, and then everything blew up, which I later learned was this anger that I had towards my father.
Mm.
So I was so angry at this man because, let's face it, where does a young woman learn to accept herself and be loved from the opposite sex, which is the most important, what should be the most important male figure in your life,
That's
which
right.
is your father.
Your first
and
relationship
course,
with the with,
yes,
with the man is
right.
with your father. Yeah,
and
I
mine
totally...
was very negative. Unfortunately, he was an alcoholic, and he was verbally abusive, and just with a tongue that could just lacerate you. And so I learned that skill very well. Not a great skill to have. And so I had gone through a phase where, boy, I could cut you down in 2 seconds. So that was a very...
Well, hold on a second. Hold on a second. We must be related.
Hello, sister.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? My weapon was my mouth. My weapon was my words. It was, and I really thought it was really powerful doing it.
Yes. Yes, and it took me, now mind you, it took me a lot of, we didn't recognize it as such or call it this, but my latter part of high school, I was bullied by girls who, I mean, I have to say, my face was, I look at pictures from that time and they still, here I am decades later, it still brings tears. So it's definitely, it was so painful. And they called me Pimple Face was my nickname. And it was chanted and it was sung. And then in one of the bathroom doors, they carved my face and put my name and made all these big circles on it for pimples. And I, when I walked into the bathroom the first time in the 10th grade, when I saw that, the bathroom, I walked in and I didn't see it. You didn't see it till you walked out. It was the entire wood door where they had carved it and written my name. And the bathroom got silent with all the girls, and I thought, why is everyone getting quiet? And then I thought, oh my God, they're all staring at my face, because everyone always did. And I, of course, you know, I walked for years with my head down. I would not make eye contact with anyone. And I went into the stall, and I mean, it was like roaches in daylight. Everybody, I just kept hearing the door. Everyone scattered. I came out, and there it was. And I was so embarrassed and filled with such shame. Although, again, why does someone who is victimized always feel the shame? And that is really something I think that we are taking seriously now as a society, and really working to let people know when things like this happen, and even worse, that there's nothing wrong with you and you don't have any shame in this. But again, there were no groups, there wasn't help then, and I was filled with such shame, I didn't even tell my mother about it until the end of school year, and this was early in the year. So if I had to go to the bathroom at that end of the school, and if I had two classes in a row, I just held it. I did not go into the bathroom for the rest of the school year at that end of school. And let me tell you, there were times my teeth were floating after having a couple of classes, and I just would sit there and go, oh, please don't let me wet my pants, please, because I thought, boy, if I wet my pants on top of this, I'm going to have to quit school. And I got through it, but... And then, of course,
I can't even imagine. You know, we talk about being so different. Everyone's so different. Oof, that story is just heartbreaking. Oh, hold on a second. Now I'm trying to get my computer up. I don't know what happened. Oh, there it is. It is heartbreaking. But I'm going to ask you a really crazy question. You ready?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Especially now, you know, and thank you so much for being so open and sharing that. It really helps. I believe it helps people to share their deepest things, the things like what you just said, the stories like that. It helps because we're in the same boat together. But this is my question.
Yes.
What good has come? I mean, what positive? What good has come from that situation today? Can you look at that, and what do you see that's so positive and so good about that whole experience?
Well,
or do you
one
have
of the, yeah, one thing that's really positive is I can tell you, if there is anyone anywhere that someone is making fun of, that someone is not treating right, boy, you better know if I'm within earshot, I walk right up and I say, don't do that. I will tell you, there's a gentleman that lives one subway stop away from me, and I think he has Asperger's. I don't know this to be a fact, but I think. And he gets on the train, and he's loud and explosive, and he does kind of, you know, he goes through a cleansing ritual with the bar, and people kind of giggle at him. And there were some young kids, I want to say millennials, who were on the train one day, and he came on, and I'm kind of, the first time it happened, I turned on the train because, you know, we're all so scared. We hear loud noises and screaming, and we immediately think, oh, my gosh, is something going wrong? Well, I saw that what it was, and I was hearing, I was like, okay, this person is just different from us. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
He just has a different journey. And I meandered over the first time, and people were standing back, and I thought, okay, if anyone says anything, I'll say something. Well, the second time I happened to be on the train with him, there were these three millennials, and they started laughing and making fun of him.
Mm.
And I was next to one, and I tapped one on the shoulder because he kind of went, this gentleman went through his thing and some of his rituals, and then he looked, they were making fun, and clearly they're standing like 2 feet from him and laughing and saying derogatory things about him, and he looked up and he gazed into the eye of this one young man, and I tapped that, I was standing next to him, I tapped him on the shoulder, we were both by the door, and I said, don't do that. And I mean, it was like his mother had just told him something that he better never do again or he's going to be in serious trouble. And he looked at me, mm-hmm. and I said, and he was frozen like a deer in headlights. And I mm-hmm. put my index finger up and I shook it back and forth like, no. And I said, don't do that. I said, you know better. I said, I don't even know you, but I know you know better. I said, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I'm sorry. I said, tell him, not me.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at the guy, and the guy then exploded again, then he just mumbled. He couldn't quite make the eye contact and give it to him, and the two girls were just dead silent. I mean, it was, and then the guy got off the train. We were, you know, a couple stops. He got off the train, and the young boy had just kind of looked down, and he's like, sorry. You know, he kind of mumbled, and then they stayed on the train one more stop, and they quickly moved away from me because I think they thought they were about to get a lecture or something, and they were embarrassed enough. Now, I wasn't loud. I mean, if you were not standing on the other side of me or on the other side of this young man, you wouldn't have heard me. I didn't scream. I didn't yell. I just said, you know better than that, just at this level. But they moved, and it next day that – a gentleman happened to be, I didn't see him, but we got on the train together and he said, I want to tell you, he said, I saw what happened yesterday. I said, sorry? And he said, with the gentleman that got on the train and those young kids. I said, oh, and I thought he was maybe going to give it to me. And I thought, okay, I'm steadied. I'm ready. I'm not going to explode on him. I'm beyond that. You know, had you caught me after, you know, 10 years after my acne, I wouldn't have been this nice because I had to work through, all that anger from being bullied to turn it into a way to stand up for others who need a helping hand. And he said, good job that you said something. And he said, I should have. And I go, well, so we all learn. I said, that's all it's about. I said, so next time. I said, next time you'll be the male voice of reason, which probably for that young man would be even more powerful than from me. And he goes, that's a really good point. And then he was just going a stopper to, and he said, have a great day. I said, you too. So I thought it was interesting what had come. So I thought the seed has been planted not only with those three young adults, but other people did see, observe, and then questioned within, again, internalized and weighed out and said, hey, maybe what should I be doing that's different? So I look at that as I would never have done that, I don't think. We never know for sure, but I know that because I have been made fun of and scoffed at and had songs made up about me and something carved on a door that was and humiliated, that I know it makes me say, I don't look like that anymore, and I have taken that anger and frustration and self-loathing. And mind you, this is, I don't want any of your listeners to say, wow, she did it, and what's wrong with me? I'm not doing it. Please hear me. It takes time, and it takes patience with yourself, and it takes loving yourself, and it takes uncovering, you know, and crying through and being angry that those people did not have a right to do that to you. And you maybe should have done something different, but you know what? You did what you were capable of doing, and so you love that about yourself, and you accept that, and you say, I'm a different person today, and I will make a different choice if someone does that to me. And so that's a very long answer to a very short question, but that's one of the things.
Well, I'm getting to know you, and you're very descriptive, and I love the way you explain it. And
thank
great,
you.
Yeah, great, great stories. What else is good? A little shorter, though, coming to the end of the hour.
Well, I was shy. So I believe it or not. And so I think this really taught me to be able to come out of my shell, because there is no one who can stand up for you and articulate what you're feeling better than you. So it connected me to find those feelings of me.
Mm-hmm.
My truth.
You know, you said, yeah, we must be related, because I was, believe it or not, very, very painfully shy when I was younger. But I want to say something else. You talked about, just a little while ago, you talked about people and what their thoughts. You know, this is what I believe. There are two voices in my head, two voices.
Only two?
Yes. Some people call it the ego, and I can tell which one. You can call it whatever you want, but it's that critical voice, that voice that tells me there's something wrong, that voice that tells me I'm not good enough, the voice that tells me I'm procrastinating, the voice that tells me I'm not doing enough, whatever that voice is. And then there's also the voice of the universe, and the voice that comes, and the voice without judgment, and the voice that tells me that you are. You are perfection. You are enough. You are this. You know, you are a creation of the universe. You are a physical form of the universe. So these two voices, I know the difference. In other words, how to get out of, okay, the voices, the critical, didn't do enough, you should have, in another chapter, you have another chapter to write. But listen, I'm editing the book, you didn't do anything last week. All of this, it's practicing which voice to focus on, which voice to give your power to. And when you realize that when I realize that my thoughts, especially the critical ones, and I'm starving this voice of any kind of action, or it's not causing me to feel or think or do something because of this voice, I can tell. So the voice of criticism, the voice of I'm humiliated, the voice I'm ashamed of myself, the voice I'm not good enough, whatever. That voice is there for a reason, not to resist it, not to try to change it, but to realize that it has no power. I like to say it's 5 years old, and I wouldn't put a five-year-old behind a seat of a car and say, okay, drive. So it's really practicing recognizing which voice is serving you and which voice is not.
Yes, and the more that we consciously connect, we then get in touch with our self-awareness, our inner connection, our inner voice, and what happens is that inner voice that is supportive starts to get a little louder. The decibels get turned up on that one. The other one's still there. I think that's life. I think that's what keeps us going towards our goals and what tests us and what drives us to do and try new things. When we feel dissatisfied. But there is a place of feeling dissatisfied and having inner connection to that, and a place of being dissatisfied and beating yourself up. And consciously connecting has the simple how-to exercises to get you more connected to your inner self so that that voice of connection is louder.
I love that. Perfect. I'm going to ask you one really tough question, and you can share if you want to, and if you don't want to, it's okay too, because we have a few more minutes. So when's the last time you got angry?
Boy.
The angry, I don't mean like, you know, really just ready to rip somebody's eyes out, but just, okay, I'm a little irritated at that. We can't use the husband anymore because we used him already.
We can't use him? Oh, okay. Well, then now I...
Okay, if it's a different example, let's use him again. Come on. He doesn't know.
You know, there are times, and again, this is where I often say to him, boy, oh boy, the universe really has a sense of humor. My husband works in the concrete industry. So that is, I am all about neat and clean. I mean, my spices are alphabetized, okay? So that just lets everybody know immediately what side of crazy I'm on, okay? My husband, because he works in an industry that tends to be, you know, messy and dirty, he may track in, you know, some concrete dust and powder, and it just gets me crazy. And I'm about, let's open the mail now, let's do it. He's about, let's throw it on the desk, and he doesn't care how the pile lands. So I would say probably, you know, and that's something, again, that the universe has a great sense of humor, because they are really saying to me, really, you know, it's like you're having the garbage picked up. Okay, so if the mail isn't opened immediately, if the mail is thrown on the desk and it's not a neat little fussy pile, does that really matter in the realm of life? It really doesn't. It doesn't really affect the quality of your marriage. So Wayne, thank you, Wayne, I guess, is teaching me to let go of these things. So I'm probably angry, like, not angry, but going, why can't you just do it, you know, twice a week, probably.
And
it used to be like four or five times, so I'm doing better. But that is definitely something, you know, I am a human like everybody else who's trying to work through the other side, and I'm really trying to understand why does this neat thing, and I know I had to compartmentalize feelings when I was made fun of, feelings from my father. And so you can't control that internally when you're a child. You don't have the knowledge and the tools. So you look to do it in your external world. So I would go in my room and organize my room. And so there is that carryover as an adult that I am still looking to organize, because if my external is organized, my internal will be. And so I've got to continue to work to sync the two up. And so I have my stuff, and that's one of my challenges that I share with everyone.
I love that. I mean, thank you so much for sharing. You are human. Yay!
Yes, I am. I you know, look, I make mistakes, and I've learned, you know, I've really learned to say to people, Rebecca, when I'm wrong. I was just in a client's office a few days ago, and I felt that I had barked at someone. I felt I went back to her and I said, I'm sorry. I said, did I bark at you? And she goes, no, you didn't. I said, okay, I felt like I was a little, like I kind of, instead of asking you to do something, I felt I kind of barked out an order. I said, I felt a little military after I walked away. I was like, wait a second. So I said, I just wanted to clear the air. She goes, oh, no, you didn't. She goes, but thank you. She said, you're so great. And so I think if you try to own things and try to, I think that's what's always keeps us moving forward in a great direction.
Well, your intention is always, I don't know, I can feel you, is to be loving and to share, and that is your intention, and that's all, that's really the most important, I believe. So I love that. But I have to disagree with you, strongly disagree on this one point that you just made. You used the word that I don't even believe exists. You ready?
What is it? Ready.
You ready?
Yes!
There is no such thing as a mistake.
And you know what? Thank you for catching me, because in my book, I wrote that very thing. I said, you know, there are no mistakes. They are merely stepping stones to get across the river, to get to the other side. So you busted me on my own book, lady. Good job.
Yay! I knew I would do it. I love that. I love that. You know, you've been such a pleasure just chatting with you. Please share with my listeners where they can find you, your book, your website, and all that other good stuff.
All right. So my website is my name. I'm easy to find. So my name is hollandhaas.com. So it's double L's, double I's. I know my last name's tricky. So it's H-A-I-I-S like Sam. And that's how you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. The book is called Consciously Connecting, A Simple Process to Reconnect in a Disconnected World. So if you're looking for how-tos for interconnection and self-awareness, this is a great tool. You can get that on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BalboaPress.com. And I hope that if anyone is looking to have a workshop designed around what they might need for friends, family, business, that you reach out to me or a motivational speaker or one-on-one coaching. And again, you can reach me through my website. And this has been such a pleasure.
It has been fun. Again, and her website is Holland Haas, spelled HollandHaiis.com. Thank you so much, Holland, for being on the show today. I really had a great time, and I appreciate you sharing all of your wealth of knowledge and and also for being so open and honest about, you know, behind the curtain, backstage information. That is so important that we're all here to learn and grow from each other. And you know, this comparing, I used to compare myself to someone else and, they have it easier. But, you know, no one knows what's behind the curtain. And thank you so much for being so transparent to help and to offer your story. It was a powerful, powerful story. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being such a great host and for coming out and playing with me. I appreciate
it. Hey, okay. Woo, everybody, what a great show. So Reality Spirituality is heard live every Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, we usually have a fabulous guest from somewhere in the world. And then on Sunday, it's Ask Rebecca Anything, where you can call in live and ask me a question about what's going, you know, how to, your life, how to experience more happiness. It's just sharing and coming up with answers. I believe in, okay, there's an issue. There's a challenge. What is the solution? Challenge, solution. There's always a solution, but it really comes down to that person in the mirror. It really comes down to looking in the mirror, because all of your answers, all of your solutions, all of your, I don't like to say the word problems, can be found in the mirror. And it's about, look, that's how powerful you are. You really don't need anyone else to, in other words, needing, you really have all the answers in the mirror, you and the universe. This is your journey. Whew, what a great show. I'm still just charged up about it. I want you to remember, before I sign out, I want you to remember who you are. You are a physical extension of the universe. You're always growing. You're always changing. Love is patient. And love is kind. Be patient and be kind to yourself. Be your own best friend. Remember, my favorite quote of all time is, you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. That's from Abraham. You cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. Connect with me on Facebook. If you've liked the show, just go to Facebook, Reality Spirituality, and like that page. Follow me on Twitter at R.L. Norrington. And until tomorrow, have a wonderful, my book, Reality, the Spirituality, the Truth About Happiness, actually that's the first edition, can be found on my website or on Amazon or lulu.com. And it is going to be a first edition because now I'm, as a lot of you know, I'm editing it, and it's going to be out again. It's going to be published with a real publisher as opposed to being self-published. So that's going to be out again, Reality, Spirituality, the Truth About Happiness. But if you want a collector's item and you want me to autograph it for you, you can go to Amazon, you can go to Rebecca Norrington, and I will sign it for you. Until tomorrow, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Thanks again for being part of the show. Thank you for connecting. Have a great, great day, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experience. Reality. Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Reality.
You got a question for R.L.?
Reality, spirituality.
And it's time to get some answers.
get down.